In this year's entries, there was a fellow who was making water features for offices.
Ooh. Yeah.
And first of all, they were beautiful, but second of all, they sounded beautiful because it's water, it's flowing water.
Mm.
And just there's something about that sound that just calms everyone down.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about it. I grew up near the West Coast here in Denmark. So yeah, the sea has always been there, and yeah, definitely. And Aarhus is also a harbor city, so definitely there's something relaxing going to the water and hearing the whistling. We implemented that in Nesses, actually.
Oh, did you?
We have a water fountain that you know it's spatial. So when you get near to it, you hear it whistling.
That's so neat.
Yeah, yeah. And you can sit by it and actually get the feeling that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Just, you know, dream away.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the second part of my conversation with Rune R.B. Eskelsen.
One of the games that is being developed here in Aarhus is Out of Words, and that is a cool project.
It's called Out of Words?
Out of Words, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can send you a link afterwards. And
sure.
Yeah.
Really interesting. And you said it's claymation? Is it like...
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so fantastic.
They animate everything and then put it into
the
game.
So all done by hand.
Yeah.
By human hands.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm now amazed, especially since the next question that I'm going to ask you has to do with AI, of course.
Yeah.
You know, like how much impact are you seeing that make on the industry right now? And is it sound-wise, visual-wise, like is it replacing or are people just using
it? So I think, you know,
there
in Denmark, our pro organization just launched a huge lawsuit against Suno for copywriting artists like Aqua, who are, you know, I'm a Barbie Girl and stuff like that.
As far as I understand, Denmark is the first country in the EU to put forth a bill to copyright voice and likeness.
Yeah, which, yeah, yeah. That's definitely another thing.
Thank you very much.
Exactly. So that's what that means for us is that, you know, if you have a phone call and someone is recording it, it's illegal if they record it, you know, without your permission, and then also to use it. But I think so. In terms of that, I think what I'm seeing is that, you know, the organization and organizations and the you know the artists they want to get this sorted out. So I mean, if you create a tool that can create music for you, that's probably fine. But you have to ask for permission to import Hans Zimmer's music so you can make similar music. Unless if you build it, I mean, if you build an instrument up from the ground that is AI driven, in so to speak, that's perfectly fine for me, but if you take bits and pieces off Spotify or Spotify sells your music to these companies, then I'm not sure that's okay, and I wouldn't want to be on those platforms if they just could sell my music rights on to other companies.
Voice actors are facing the same thing. You know, our voices are all over the place. It's not like we can pull that back right now. Like the toothpaste is out of the tube. So,
definitely.
You know, some protections would be nice. But up until now and before Denmark's ruling, there was no protection for our voices at all.
No.
So, yeah,
so I'm hoping that it will be something. But in terms of you know, AI taking over, and I read someone writing about on LinkedIn some days ago, you know, the music, like if you are making something about jingles, I think it was like, oh, you're making jingles, oh, that's boring, right? No, because it's stories. Like you even like, even though it might be just bling bling, very simple, it's a story that you are trying to convey through the brand or whatever you're making that sound for. And I think, yes, you could recreate the same thing with an AI, but it wouldn't be able to encapsulate the thoughts that we've spoke about, or that the agency or the customers or whoever the idea maker of what's it coming out. I'm not sure it would create the same thing. You know, if you tried to write with ChatGPT, you kind of get a little annoyed because it kind of does what you want it to do, but
yeah,
at the same time,
it's so middle of the road.
Yeah,
it's so boring.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you just had that conversation with a human, I think it would be much more fruitful in that sense. But also acknowledging that AIs are tools that are here to stay. And, you know, I know a lot of people making podcasts like you who use AI to do the video editing, or, you know, because they have, you know, so they record 2-hour long session and then it has to be out by midnight because that's the deadline. So instead of sending it to an writer or whatever, or editor, I think, you know, that there are some use cases where it's nice, and I think you just have to embrace it as tools, and of course you need to have, as I mentioned earlier, the law in place for it to work properly.
Human oversight is just so important in all of this, because I know, like, I actually, for this podcast, have a human writer to do the show notes, which I don't think a lot of people do these days.
No.
But there's a reason for that. I really feel that the person that I'm sending this information to is taking out the best parts and making sure that people know really what this is about from a human perspective, not just from, oh, let's find the most, you know, interesting point that I as a computer think might be interesting via the algorithms, you know? And I know, I don't blame people for doing it because it does save a lot of time.
Yeah.
I'll give them that. And also we use Opus clips. So we use a way to take clips of the video that it tells us algorithm wise will do better in the social media platforms and stuff like that, right?
But so, then again, you're embracing it as a tool that you can choose to use, and you can then say, I remember that this part was much better, and then you go into that instead of what's it suggesting.
Exactly. And human oversight allows me to decide that, well, the one it thought was 99%, I don't like as much as the one it said was 96%. So I want to go with that one.
Exactly. You know, I totally agree.
That all the time. So, you know, human oversight. I know that we've had like music sampling and all of that kind of thing going on for a long, long time. So it's not like this is all entirely new. But I think what's new is that people are starting to use a button press as the creative process. And that's disappointing because that's not humanity. And whatever is creating the thing that you asked it to create when you push that button has no lived human experience behind it to make something that might actually touch someone. So,
in terms of doing music, I sometimes use, algorithm, and I wouldn't say AI, but it's algorithm based tools for mastering or stuff like that. But I use it as a starting point, you can say, as a preset. But then from there, I evolve my own stuff, you know. So I turn stuff off or put something down. But it's all part of making my work easier, at least at some aspects which I might not want to do, or, you know, like, so it just have to be fast. If I need to deliver something fast, then it also, you know, the work process needs to be optimized. And I think that's fine. Also, you know, I use ChatGPT much more privately as a search engine or an expanded search engine, because it's so much, you know, better at finding, if I write, I need this and this and this, where can I get it? Than Google may be, but sometimes Google is also better, you know. It's
Yeah, it's funny how search is changing now too because of ChatGPT, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All of those, because all of the AI search engines, I guess, all of the AI things that you can use are much faster at giving you exactly what you want, not giving you 15 options.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think that that is part of what the search engines couldn't change up until now. So now Google, I think, is starting to put their own AI into their search engine.
Yeah.
And Bing is doing the same thing, too. So, yeah, like Microsoft is getting in on the game. They're all getting in on the game.
Definitely.
My worry about this, though, is how much resources are we using to make these AI chatbots?
Yeah.
And how sustainable is that?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't honestly know, unless you like put a whole island aside.
No, but it's true. I mean, in talking from Nessus and Fair Games, we actually joined this program, and I wasn't part of it, but we joined this university program or investigation or what you would call it, where, you know, we needed to look at how much CO2 we were spending, or how many resources we were spending on the game, where when players are playing and servers are running. I think, and it's not to know, you know, how do you say, be totally good about it, but I think it was the results were positive, and we were like not on the high side and on all of that, and also because it's difficult to know exactly what kind of computer is used on the user end. But I definitely agree there is some ethical questions to be asked. You know, data centers are growing up. I mean, I just learned about recently that in Amsterdam or somewhere in the Netherlands, they use data centers to heat up the city. So they build them underground, and then they heat up parts of the city. Yeah.
I mean, you know, dual usage. I don't think that's a bad thing.
No,
you may
think,
as well get something out of it.
Exactly. And so that would be like power efficiency. And then also if your power then is coming from wind energy or water energy, you know, then maybe that. But I'm not an expert. It's just, you know, personal opinions and
no, I think it's a great thing to point out. So, you know, there should be maybe some synergy between the electrical energy output and what we're using that for.
Definitely. I mean, I would have no problems of the huge data centers if they were building a huge windmill park as well beside it and funneling that way. I think that's completely fine, because then it's green energy and it's at least much better, because it's not going to go away, I think. On the ethical side, we're talking about it, it will keep coming. And if lawsuits aren't enough, I mean, there will be new lawsuits and there will be new companies.
Doing it's coming.
Yeah.
We know. Well, it's here. I mean, we know it's not going away anytime soon.
Hi, I'm Ken Johnson from Artistry and Sound, and you're listening to the Audio Branding Podcast, a great place to learn about how powerful sound can be if you want to understand how to harness that power in your own life. Keep listening.
My thought on that, though, is more that the money cost of it is going to be so high that the people who are making these things like ChatGPT, they're raising a whole bunch of money, but is that enough money?
Yeah.
And is it money that's going to sustain them over time? So it's kind of, we're in the beginning stages of all this. I don't think we're seeing how it's going to end up yet. And I'm looking at this more from it's not an endless resource. And we can't assume it is.
No.
That it popped up out of the ether. You know, it takes stuff to make this.
Yes.
And how much does it take to make it, and how sustainable is that, and where does it take things from? Because it's not just popping up out of the air, it's being made by stuff that we already have here and is now being directed over there. So, Yeah. So it's an interesting, yeah, I think it is ethics, but it's also dollars and cents.
Yeah.
And you know,
and people... especially about that, you know, raising prices for the usage of it. Also something that worries me a little bit is, you know, the data that they have about, you know, the user. So is this stored somewhere? Is it something that, you know, the government can access at some point? Can the companies sell these informations or this
or
data?
Stuff that another government can access?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I mean, if it's not protected, then who has access to that?
And exactly, I think in Fair Games we have we try to opt out of all of the Google AI things where it wants to read your emails and summarize them and stuff like that, just because we don't know where. So even though it might not go anywhere, we don't know if it's going anywhere, and it takes a snapshot and put in somewhere, you know, and hide it, and there
it's
might be some
true.
Secret stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's also a concern, and especially as you mentioned the pricing, because suddenly you would have like insanely high prices for using these things, and if they then also have your data to, you know, back that up, I mean, we've seen it with Facebook, you know, how they sell ads to you based on
yeah, exactly. So. And I've heard this multiple times, that if something is free to you, then you are the product.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, totally. I mean, that's kind of how it works. So, and we've all been, I don't know, like the minute the internet came on to the scene, I think we were all raised like that, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's true.
Anyway, so now that we've done a deep dive into that.
Yes, indeed. Oh, that's nice. I mean,
goodness.
It's very relevant. So,
it's interesting. It is really interesting. And I think that it does have a lot of bearing on where sound is going, because AI is influencing everything in our life right now, and sound among all of those other things, and the idea of keeping a human overseeing this, and the human being the creative driver as opposed to the AI, the computer, I think is still very important. So
definitely, and I mean for my own personally, how do you say, experience. When I did NSS, the initial assignment was actually to replace the music that the creator of NSS, Fair, he already did. But he used royalty-free music from some guy online.
Yes, of course.
And
so
this kind of matches, you know, if you do a film, you often have temp music put into the film.
Yep.
And this was kind of the same thing. So he had the vibe that he wanted to do. And I think, again, talking about, you know, AI as a tool, maybe people would do that, you know, say, this is kind of the vibe that I want to do, and I've made it with AI or made it myself or whatever, but now I want you to do it probably. And I think that's from what I've seen, you know, a very good use case of it.
Oh, sure, totally.
Because
valid.
Then I get to, you know, I already know then kind of what do I have to work with and understand, you know, from, he's a developer. And a hardcore coder, so he really, you know, doesn't understand the music language. But like, oh, it's too thin, or it's too thick, or it's too high or too low. That's kind of the language that he uses. So me being able to say, okay, so this is the music that he decided that he wants for the game, and so it's much more adaptive for me to actually go and do it.
Yeah, it does make it a lot easier to figure out what emotion he was going for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I often ask for examples of when I'd done documentaries. You know, I ask for a whole playlist of stuff that the director wanted to hear, or, you know, setting the scene for the film. Similar to temp music, but because, you know, working in documentary, I think... it's much more, you know, not always tailored directly, but, you know, you have scenes and, you know, then they will cut it afterwards and put the music where they see fit, rather than this is a very epic scene, so it has to be epic music. But yeah.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I know that, for instance, when I'm replacing a voiceover on a corporate narration or a documentary or something like that, some of them have used an AI voice.
Yeah.
Just so that they can make sure that the video follows along a certain line and that the music swells in certain places, you know? And then I'm replacing that. It's not like they're trying to put the AI voice as the final thing.
No.
Yeah, it just helps them with the development. I think also things are moving so fast these days that people are expected to put output it so quickly now. That
and equal you know, to what we can do as humans in that sense.
Yeah, like even more so, because it's making the job harder for us to be able to make that much output. Yeah, I know that I've talked a lot of with a lot of ad people, a lot of ad agency people who in the early days, like Ted Rosnick was here, and he's a ad guy from like 50 years ago in Toronto, in like Canada.
Yeah.
And he's been working on tons of ads since like day one. He was working on a lot of music to begin with, but lots of ads. As the time progressed, he had to come up with ideas on a daily basis as opposed to a weekly basis. Yeah. Like it just like it got, you know, almost to an hour, like, you know, and he just retired like this year. So the amount of output that he's seen be necessary from 50 years ago to now has, it's just exponentially exploded. So,
and it's the same thing talking about doing trailer music.
Yeah,
it's so short. Like it may not even be 24 hours. To do
video
a trailer.
Game music as well, I'm sure.
Definitely. Deadlines are coming up and you need to be fast.
Yeah, so the speed means using AI becomes almost necessary for certain
things.
Or
knowing
things.
Your craft very well.
Or knowing your craft very well, exactly. Yes, yeah, definitely. And speaking of that, what do you think product designers should start doing if they want their products to sound better in the future?
Oh, wow. I think
I know it's a big question.
I think, you know, talking to if it's product producing sounds, I think talking to people who know, you know, either music people like myself who know what may convey right through different types of speakers. I think that would be, you know, a first step to do it better. But I work a lot with Genelex from Finland, and I love their sound. And I'm testing out their new headphones, and I think, you know, suddenly I could, compared to these I have on now, I could hear a lot of tactile stuff that I couldn't hear before. So I think, you know, being aware of what you put into the devices, you probably heard those speakers that sound so horrible that it almost distorts and sounds good in that way because it's distorting. But, you know, so being aware of the quality of elements that you put into products, if that makes sense.
How do you do this more deliberately?
Exactly. But again, also, you know, consulting with someone who knows something about you, know, it could be speech, it could be sound, it could be the acoustics of whatever gadget you're producing. You know, some car companies, they make sounds when the door closes because it needs to sound right. And they definitely thought about that.
The sound in cars has a lot to do with how people feel about the build of it, how expensive that build is.
Yeah.
So you're going to expect a car sound to sound much more upscale in, say, a Mercedes than you would in a, like, you know, Toyota, regular, just, you know, run-of-the-mill car, right? Like
exactly.
Yeah.
And then of course, the Toyota, if it were more trashy, they would, of course, work with these elements to make it feel more, you know, luxurious. So, yeah. So I think that would be kind of my answer to you know, what should product designers do when doing about sound. But I think also maybe, you know, not just sound specific, but I also feel something about the shapes of not only devices but stuff. I don't, and gadgets, you know, like a chair that I'm sitting on right now. I think also, you know, hard surfaces reflect sound differently than round or soft surfaces. And you know, I think that's also something that would matter if you were to make, like, depending on what you're trying to achieve, of course, but I think that would also impact the way that an object would behave in a room or, yeah.
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening, so it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you had a room that was full of soft surfaces, and you know, then something that you make in that room is going to sound different than if there's reflection from all sorts of hard surfaces.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so it depends on how you're listening.
Yes, definitely.
There's a lot that, yeah. So I guess sound designers really need to pay attention to a lot of different things.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was walking past this architecture firm today, and I was thinking, like, should I go talk to them about doing music or sound or whatever in house designing or house architecture? Is there something there? I know, you know, a lot of buildings they try to implement good acoustics, and if we just moved to a new office space here it's all concrete and hard floors, so a lot of hard surfaces, which also makes for, like, you know,
it's echoey.
Yeah. Even though we have, like, acoustic ceilings that dampening, but I guess
it depends on how it makes you feel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting. I know I was one of the judges of the International Sound Awards this year. This has actually been my third year, and in this year's entries, there was a fellow who was making water features for offices.
Ooh. Yeah.
And first of all, they were beautiful. But second of all, they sounded beautiful because it's water. It's flowing water.
Mm.
And just there's something about that sound that just calms everyone down.
Yeah. Tell me about it. I grew up near the West Coast here in Denmark. So yeah, the sea has always been there, and yeah, definitely, and Aarhus is also a harbor city. So definitely there's something relaxing going to the water and hearing the whistling. We implemented that in Nesses, actually.
Oh, did you?
We have a water fountain that you know, it's spatial, so when you get near to it, you hear it whistling.
That's so neat.
Yeah, and you can sit by it and actually get the feeling that you're talking about. Just, you know, dream away.
But so interesting. And it's interesting that natural sounds can really affect us that way. And the idea of bringing a natural sound into an unnatural environment can actually help that environment become more acceptable, easier to be in.
Exactly. We have a lot of plants here. I guess that's sort of the same, you know.
Yeah,
it's
that
not
would
plastic
help.
Plants. It's real plants.
Yeah.
And that's definitely, you know, it lights up, and there's some colors which you really can't emulate that well.
Yeah.
Even though some of the plastic ones are good, but you know, there's just something about it.
Yeah, they're not going to help your air, however.
No.
So, yeah, you want real plants to help your air.
Yeah. But it's interesting, and then that's, you know, also working acoustically in rooms. I guess that's also something that it's impacting. You know, having plants or installations like that. Definitely.
Yeah, just so interesting how influenced we are as human beings by little things like that. You know, we think it's little, but it's not really little.
No, because you're so right.
Yeah, yeah. So we are coming to the end of our discussion here, Rune, and I have really enjoyed this. Yeah, it went by really fast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is there anything you're working on now that you can talk about that you
So actually,
mention?
We are just on the, how do you say, Lalo.
Okay.
So we just published Necess 14 days ago to 1.0. And so now we are just making bug fixes and stuff like that. We have some updates coming, and we will also be on sale on Steam when we go into winter. So that is nice. And yeah, we have some bigger updates coming. We released a roadmap also a week ago or something like that. So that's going to be exciting. So yeah, I would say if you like adventure sandbox games, come join.
Out.
2.2 million players in this.
Wow. That's fantastic. Yeah.
That
Congratulations.
Nice.
I think by the time this comes out, all of it will be released. So
yeah.
It'll all be good.
Nice.
So whoever's listening, you could go and check it out right now.
Yeah. It's definitely out there. Yeah.
Yeah. So how can someone get in touch with you personally if they'd like to do that?
I mean, you could send on my email or go on LinkedIn. I am always happy to connect.
Okay.
I think
I will have the links in the show notes so people can look you up there. I know
I'll find me on Instagram.
In LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, thank you so much, Rune. This was a great conversation, and I really appreciate your being here.
Yeah, thank you too. I appreciate being here.
Thanks.
Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time,